afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, February 14th, 2020. Happy Friday, Dave. Happy Valentine's Day.
Hey, back at you, Melody.
And did you have a nice Valentine's Day today with your wife and daughter?
Off to a good start.
All right. Good deal.
Thanks for
And us. Happy Valentine's to all of you out there. And I guess we could say we had a little bit of a Valentine's Day in the gold and silver market. We had gold up another $680 in the New York spot price aftermarket at $1,584. We have silver up 11 cents at $1,784. Platinum was down $4 at $969. And palladium was down a buck, $2,466. The USDX today was up 0.02 at 99.13. Crude oil was up 0.67 at 52.09. And the paper markets, the numbers are still ticking through, but pretty much the Dow was down 62 points at 29,361. NASDAQ was up 20 at 9,731, and the S&P was up 6 at 3380. 10-year yield, 1.59%. It doesn't know which direction it wants to go in. And Euro, 108, that was down 0.03. Let's see, quiet market, Asian, European markets. The only one up was Hong Kong, and that was up just a third of a percent. And, you know, it's been pretty quiet everywhere else. I guess everybody is just sort of waiting. This is going to be a wait-and-see year. We're going to wait and see what the coronavirus is going to do, and we're going to wait and see what the election is going to be doing. So it's a wait and see year. And although consumer sentiment, and again, to me, these are signs when you have the consumer sentiment stronger than expected. It's kind of like, Dave, it's just one of those signs to show that, you know, people are, with the amount of debt that they're collecting that we've talked about on this program day in and day out, and, you know, all the signs that are out there that you know, they don't have to panic and they don't have to, you know, be fearful, but that should take pause and to say, well, you know what, maybe I need to start changing my behavior, my spending habits, and maybe I ought to start saving, and maybe I ought to start getting out of some of that fiat currency, because maybe these signs are telling me that, you know, there could be some issues coming in the future, you know, but consumer sentiment for February, higher than expected. And this was from the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index, came in at 100.9. And everyone was expected 99.5. Not a whole lot of difference there, but consumers' assessment of current economic conditions, again, were virtually unchanged from January. The chief economist for the Surveys of Consumers, Richard Curtained, current personal finances as well as evaluations of the national economy each posted large gains. Net gains in household income and wealth were reported more frequently in early February than in any prior time since 1960. And everybody believes that the economy is the stock market. So that's so as long as that stock market is high, we must be in a great economy, right, Dave?
Yeah, that's what they say.
So, you know, but so there are mixed, there were other numbers that sort of gives a mixed signal about the U.S. economy, Dave.
Indeed. You know, consumer spending appears to have slowed further in January. Sales of clothing stores declined by the most since 2009, which would raise concerns about the economy's ability to continue expanding at even a moderate pace. Commerce Department said this morning that retail sales, excluding automobiles, gasoline, building materials, and food services, were unchanged last month. Data for December was revised downward to show the so-called core retail sales rising 0.2% instead of the excuse me, 0.5% as had previously been reported. Now, core retail sales correspond most closely with the consumer spending component of gross domestic product. And that's why we talk about it every month or so. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast core retail sales rising 0.3% last month. The unchanged reading in that figure suggests consumer spending slowed further after it lost considerable momentum in the fourth quarter. The retail apocalypse continues, Melody.
Yes, it does, but the economy is still in a very good place, and it's performing well, per se, the Fed Chair Jerome Powell. Last month, the Fed left interest rates steady.
I was worried. I thought that was coming from you.
I'm always worried. Anyway, he said, we all know that they left interest rates steady last month. And I think they're kindly widely expected to keep the monetary policy on hold this year. But I'm not sure going into the election, and if the markets begin to weaken and they can't hold this economy together till election day, you're going to have a president come unglued, and he's going to put his full force towards the Fed Chair Jerome Powell to lower rates. I mean, already you're beginning to hear the little words, they ought to lower rates, and it's all the Fed's fault, and blah, 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 blah. It's all of Washington's fault for allowing all this to happen. He says we're at a good spot. He says that the economy grew 2.3%, but it slowed from 2.9% in 2018, but it's still good, you know. Overall retail sales, however, rose 0.3%, as you mentioned. Data for December was revised down. Auto sales rebounded 0.2% after slumping 1.7% in December. That's still a pretty weak number regardless.
Indeed.
So it's, the sales at building materials stores, they jumped 2.1%, but a lot of that, could be expected because of the unseasonably mild weather that everyone is having. So.
Yeah. No. Jumping from that for a moment to, I guess, trade. As we know, the president has never been a fan of the World Trade Organization. In fact, for many years, Trump has called the WTO the worst trade deal ever. And that's mainly because he believes the WTO helped China gain a competitive advantage over the U.S. and precipitated the loss of thousands of American jobs. Excuse me, Trump's trade chief, Robert Lighthizer, supports this view and has expertly poked at the organization's weaknesses. Under Lighthizer's stewardship, the U.S. has imposed hundreds of billions of dollars worth of unilateral tariffs against China and has exploited the WTO's national security loophole to put duties on steel and aluminum. More importantly, perhaps, and it's paralyzed the WTO's appellate body, which can no longer resolve trade disputes because we've blocked every appointment to fill vacancies, and now there's no quorum. Collectively, all these actions have thrust the WTO into the most acute crisis of its 25-year history, says some economists. What's more, Trump may not be finished yet.
Well, it part of that is true. The WTO has been unfair to a lot of, but then again, our problems with losing jobs isn't based on the WTO. It's based on the decisions that came from D.C. And the trade agreements that were signed. And, so you just can't finger point only to that. And usually the administration doesn't. He points to everything. It was a combination of everything. But, a lot of these contracts, Dave, and so forth, these agreements, they really do need to be updated. I mean, they're a little bit antiquated, they do need to move into modern times and to where we can have a more fair. No one recognizes the word fair anymore. It doesn't need to be free. We need to have fair trade. Totally withdraw, you know, people can look at it and say, yeah, that's a great thing, but maybe we need to just change it and have it benefit us. But maybe sometimes that's what you have to do first to get the deal going. I don't know. I was never a fan of deals. Just not a fan of deals because usually you have to give up something. We've known this administration, President Trump has long held frustration with the WTO's principle of most favored nation, non-discrimination, and certainly China has, that was once they were designated a favored nation deal, you know, that's where a lot of things suddenly, you know, allowed trade to flow into China, Dave.
Well, that's the cornerstone of the WTO, mm-hmm. and undermining it, some say, risks tipping over the entire farm. Okay. Chad Brown of the Peterson Institute for International Economics said the U.S. sees it only as a constraint on their ability to strike quick and to dirty deals. But take away MFN, and suddenly the entirety of benefits that the WTO provides begins to unravel, including those that Americans have enjoyed for decades. On the one hand, these kinds of salvos against faceless bureaucrats in Geneva, where the WTO is housed, will be an easy sell at home for Trump's core voters during an election year. But defenders of a rules-based trading system say dismantling it would cause a severe shock to the American economy.
Well, that's what they said about Brexit, too. Brexit. Mm-hmm. That's what they said about Brexit, too. You know, the whole world was going to come undone after they did the deal and, you know, they pulled away. But they had how many years to, you know, to desensitize all the markets and so forth to what was going to happen. But, you know, hey, everything is still flowing. You know, I mean, all sure, all these countries, all these economies certainly are under stress. And they certainly are being stimulated by the governments and central banks around the world. So, yeah, they're not healthy. But the end of the world didn't happen when Brexit has been completed. We did talk a little bit about this yesterday. We talked about the Berkshire Hathaway, the vice chairman, Charlie Munger, Berkshire Hathaway. These guys are getting up there in age, but they know what's going on. And he issued, and Charlie Munger, I mean, both him and Warren Buffett, they hate gold. But Charlie Munger did issue a warning about the future the other day, and he sees troubles coming. And he says there's just too much wretched excess. Munger, who chairs the publisher, highlighted how much risk investors are taking when investing, particularly in China. He says in China, they love to gamble in stocks. He says this is really stupid. It's hard to imagine anything dumber than the way the Chinese hold stocks. Well, yeah, I can think of one of the way Americans hold stocks. I think that's pretty dumb, too. But anyway, in the U.S. alone, investors face risks ranging from the coronavirus impact on the economy to political uncertainty from the upcoming presidential election. Also, the Treasury announced on Wednesday that the U.S. budget deficit increased by 25% in the first 4 months of 2020, the fiscal 2020, to $1.06 trillion. That's not too much, Dave, is it?
Yikes. Yet, and still, the Dow Jones Industrial Average and S&P both hit record highs that same day. Go figure. To make his point about access, Munger cited the proliferation of EBI, TDA, EBITDA, as a fake profit metric. He said, I don't like when investment bankers talk about that. I call it BS earnings. He says it's ridiculous. EBITDA, EBI, TDA, which is short for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, he said, doesn't accurately reflect how much a company makes, unlike traditional earnings. Think of the basic intellectual dishonesty that comes when you start talking about adjusted EBITDA. You're almost announcing you're a flake. strong talk there from the old guy. Uber shares jumped last week after saying it was moving up its EBITDA profitability target to the fourth quarter of this year.
But Munger says that's not the only thing that's bothering him. He also said that the innovation boom that he has experienced throughout his life could start to wane. He says he does not think that his generation had the best of all this technological change. He's 96? I didn't think he was that old. Sure that's not 86? Sure he's not 86? But, you know, he talked about medicine has improved dramatically during his...
No, I don't know. I read 96.
Wow.
But we don't want to make him any older than he is. Either way, I guess, you know, it's pretty impressive how active he is, despite how we might feel about any particular position he and his partner, the big guy from Omaha, may take from time to time.
Yeah. He said that
speaking of positions, how about it? Yesterday, a federal judge ordered a temporary block on the Jedi Cloud contract, which the Pentagon awarded to Microsoft. That was in response to a suit filed by Amazon. A court notice announcing the injunction was filed, but wasn't yet public. It's unclear why the documents were sealed. The Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure, or JEDI, cloud computing contract is intended to modernize the Pentagon's IT operations. The contract is $10 billion for services rendered over as many as 10 years. Microsoft was awarded the contract on October 25th. Amazon's cloud computing arm, Amazon Web Services, AWS, has been instructed to earmark $42 million for any costs and damages that could be incurred in the event that the injunction was issued wrongfully. Amazon must file notice with the courts indicating it has obtained the $42 million by February 20th, next Thursday. Microsoft and Amazon must respond to the filing 1 week later. Sounds like Melody, perhaps I am having some technical difficulty here. I can't hear Melody, so I'm going to continue and take us into the first
You
break.
Can't hear me? You can't hear me?
Ah, there you are.
Yeah.
There you are.
Yeah.
I hear you loud and clear now. Ah!
You hear the break? You hear the music? Are you hearing voices?
There.
Are you hearing voices?
I'm...
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs archived and, of course, live at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Heading into the break, we're talking or getting ready to talk about the new Fed Reserve Board nomination, Judy Shelton. She, you know, went through a confirmation hearing yesterday, and she was grilled over her views on central bank independence, the gold standard, whether the money that people deposit at the bank should be insured. She faced a barrage of criticism over multiple statements that she has made over the years. You know, she kind of defended herself that she was, you know, she thinks outside the box. And she wants to bring her own experience and ideas to the Fed. Well, I don't know how well that's going to go over, Dave, but I wouldn't, highly unlikely, I think, that she's going to get the job, but that's just my opinion. What do you think?
Well, I think I'd concur. I'd concur with that assessment after seeing the reaction of the senators in both parties react to some of the things she said yesterday. You know, you had Doug Jones of Alabama saying, accusing Shelton of having a confirmation conversion. And he said that you said it best, that when we will get that what we will get is the authentic Judy Shelton, and that's what bothers me tremendously. That's Doug Jones of Alabama. Ohio Sherrod Brown was even more direct. The bottom line is, Miss Shelton, you have too many alarming ideas and has flip-flopped on too many important issues to be confirmed for this job. Now, obviously, her confirmation isn't yet assured. If she loses just two Republican votes, it would kill the nomination in committee. One policy analyst said her testimony appears to not have been enough to win over skeptical Republican senators. That particular Washington insider also speculated that Shelton might have a rougher road, given the speculation that she could be considered for the Fed chairmanship after Jerome Powell's term ends. So by late yesterday, one Capitol Hill paper was reporting that the president could be pulling her nomination as early as today. But Reuters reported that the White House expected Shelton to be confirmed by the entire Senate. So who knows? We'll follow along and obviously keep you abreast of what's happening, because it is the Fed after all.
Well, my solution is they could can the Fed, and we wouldn't have to have these problems, you know. We'd be all better off without the Fed, but hey, that's just my idea. Roku. I agree with them, because I think the cost of cable anymore is just ridiculous.
It's outrageous.
And it is. And Roku, and it shocks me how people can afford their phones and cable. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But Roku predicts that within 4 years, half of all U.S. homes will never have cable TV or will have canceled their subscription. The consumer shift from expensive cable TV packages to cheaper and more flexible over-the-top internet streaming services has been driving a wave of investment and competition in the media industry. You have Comcast, NBC Universal. They're launching a service called Peacock soon, and AT&T Warner Media is planning an additional service under the HBO brand. You have Apple, Disney, Netflix. They're investing billions in new shows and movies for their services, too. Roku sees this proliferation boosting its business, but its frame as being a neutral partner at the center of the streaming ecosystem.
Yeah, Roku sells software and hardware that enables consumers to stream internet video on their televisions, as well as certain advertising services.
Isn't it free? Is that the one that's free?
I believe it is. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it is. New services and growing investment in original programming that is exclusive to streaming are enriching the over-the-top experience, according to Roku. They added that this is driving more viewers to spend more time streaming and less time in traditional pay TV, and many consumers are leaving the legacy pay TV ecosystem entirely. 73% of U.S. households had a cable or satellite TV subscription in 2017. That's according to the National Telecom and Information Administration. I wasn't sure that I didn't realize that that was an entity, but alas, the NTIA, it is.
There's a few of those that we could probably get rid of, too, and never, ever miss them. Well, you know, the people who aren't going to cancel their subscriptions are going to be those that had their wealth increase. And there was a report that was released this week from market research firm WealthX, and they focused on the very high net worth population. And these people are defined as having a net worth of between $5 and $30 million. The number of people with a net worth in that category rose to 2.7 million in 2019. That's about a growth rate of 10% from 2018. So WealthX says the jump is due to the prices of most asset classes rising in 2019. And, of course, I'll let you guess that asset. The stock market. So that's how these people are getting and making their money, is on the stock performances. So, you know, when you're making most of your money in the stock market, you're going to kind of go along, to get along. But gold, too. We've had the best performance since 2010. Gold was up almost 19% last year in 2019. And silver was up 15.5%. And that was the best showing since 2016. But an incredible move for gold where the fundamentals are strong versus the paper markets. The paper markets are up because we could see, you know, the multinational corporations buying back, the Fed buying, and everything else. So it's I guess if you have faith in those entities, then you can stay in the paper. But gold, a very nice showing in gold, really, considering the strength in the paper market. So,
well, the U.S. this report said that the U.S. was home to the majority of people with a net worth of between 5 and 30 million. There were just shy of 1 million very rich individuals meeting those criteria in 2019 in the U.S. That's up 16% from the year earlier. Of course, U.S. Also has a stark wealth gap, with income inequality last year at its highest level in at least five decades. China, again, the second largest economy, so this isn't surprising, had the second highest number of these very high net worth individuals, with 260,000 roughly, followed by Japan at 186,000, Germany with about 130,000. Taken together, the combined net worth of these very rich individuals rose by more than 10% to almost $27 trillion in 2019. Melody, it's good to be them.
Yes, and they have cable, and they can pay for it. You know, taxpayers, you know, this we're in the season, and taxpayers always going in there wondering if they're going to have to pay or if they get something back. And the answer seems to be in the 1972 song by Danny O'Keefe, Some Gotta Win and Some Gotta Lose. But so we'll have to see. So far, the IRS, the agency, has delivered 4.3 million refunds to early bird filers, distributing an average check of $1,869 to those households. And that was through the week of January 31st. And some analysts say we should resist the urge to use the refund to determine whether you're ultimately benefiting from the 2018 tax overhaul. The check you get back from Uncle Sam only tells part of the story. The number of people who think they're worse off versus those who are actually worse off is driven by this perception of whether their refund went up or down. Go figure.
That's interesting, huh? Yes. Well, here's a little bit of who's coming out ahead and how to determine whether you're a winner or a loser under the 2017 tax cuts. Now, remember, first, that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act trimmed individual tax rates overall, lowering the top rate from 30 to 37% from 39.6. Corporations, we know, also saw their rates fall from 35% to 21. At the same time, the standard deduction for single filers, these are for individual returns, went up to $12,000 from $6,350. Married filers with joint return saw their standard deduction rise to $24,000 from $12,700. 2018 tax overhaul also curbed certain itemized deductions. It also did away with personal exemptions, which were once $4,050 for yourself as a filer and each dependent in your household. Now, due to the higher standard deduction, a lot fewer people are itemizing on their tax returns.
And you know what, I'm going to go down to where there was a, and it just confirms what we say all the time. Joseph Perry, he's a national tax and business services leader. He says, sure, you can have a bigger refund, but overall, you're going to have less money in your pocket. It's true. You know, a balance due means you had few due taxes withheld from your pay, a situation some taxpayers found themselves in after the Treasury Department and the IRS overhauled the tax withholding tables for the new law. I mean, you know, taxes. True. Don't get me started. It's Friday and Valentine's Day. I don't want to get my blood pressure riled up.
Well, we can think of a lot better ways for you to use your idle funds rather than have the government hold on to them for 6, 9, maybe even 12 months plus. Now, Melody, count my wife and me among those who didn't do enough homework in the W-4 withholding respect last year. But the key takeaway is that your refund or taxes due on April 15th isn't really your tax. It's just, at that point, you're truing up for the entire year based on what you had already had withheld. To see how you really fared in the prior year, you need to look at your tax liability. That means examining line 16 of your 2019 form, 1040, and comparing it to line 15 of your 2018 individual income tax reform return. There's some other information about the AMT that we don't have to go into here. I don't know if you want to talk about the states with the high income and property taxes, Melody, in terms of that deduction that's now limited.
Nope, I hate property tax. I think it should be... that's my pet peeve.
Well, look, here's the bottom line. Use that revamped form W-4 if you're really owing a lot at the end of the year or getting a big refund. If you want to get closer to a break even, go to the IRS.gov. The IRS does have, in my mind, some helpful hints. And as we know, the government is there to help. Seriously.
Oh, happy Valentine's.
Valentine's Day.
And I have a bridge in Florida that I'm going to give you for Valentine's Day. There you go. Oh, mercy. We do have to have fun on this program. We get too serious sometimes. This is interesting. You know, I agree and disagree. President Trump, we all know, ordered that missile strike that resulted in the death of a top Iranian general. But yesterday, the Senate actually passed a measure that would limit him from engaging in further hostilities against the country without first getting approval from Congress. Now, what I find interesting, that it's just that country. What about all the other ones that might come to do? But we're just not going to let you go to war with Iran. We don't care about North Korea or anything else. That's what I think this says, Dave. You have 8 Republicans joined all Democrats and independents in voting to advance a resolution that would end hostilities against the Islamic Republic of Iran or any part of the government or military unless explicitly authorized. So, President Trump will almost certainly veto the measure. Again, it's just really just sending a message to the president, you know, that maybe it'd have a, you know, some sort of a influence on future decisions on this type of an action. But again, they specifically just say Iran. I don't think it says anything else. It's just all about Iran. Am I correct or wrong?
Well, Dave. This particular resolution is about Iran. I think it probably stems from, you know, Congress's fear of the president wanting to go further there, largely a reaction, not totally, but largely a reaction of that assassination of Qasem Soleimani at the Baghdad airport last month. But there is still the War Powers Act that, you know, in general gives the president some leeway with its military actions, but is supposed to require presidents to go to Congress for authorization for longer commitments. Now, certainly isn't intended to say it's a joke, but Congress has sort of backed off for the last 30 years, and there is much to blame for where we are today.
Exactly. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. I hear the music. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And let's see. Yeah, during the break, we were talking about there was a, you know, an announcement where the Treasury have sold the least. I don't even have that here. We were just talking about it on the Treasury sold at record low yields, and Dave had. Here's an interesting one. The White House is considering tax incentive. So you go out there and buy stocks.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. I started reading about that. Just want to research it a little bit more over the weekend, and this could be the administration's Tax Cut 2.0, at least bringing it up as they get closer to the election, the fall election, I'm sure. As, hey, elect us, and this is the kind of thing you're going to get in our second term. But there's still a lot to examine there and see if this, you know, isn't just another giveaway to the rich.
Yeah, because you're right. We shouldn't talk about it until we, you know, actually do. But we need to keep on top of that one. I'd like to know a little bit more about it, because just thinking about it, it's like, well, who buys stocks? It's your pension plans, your retirement accounts.
People with money.
So those are the guys that would be getting the tax incentive. The little individual investor, the you know, the day trader, he probably doesn't invest enough in order to, you know, have a, you know, to have an impact. But he's taking the risk. You know, he's going to have a higher risk. You know, when things go haywire, guess who has the most to lose? You know, the little guy, and the little guy will be in there thinking that, oh, this is a great thing. It's like, that is disgraceful. That is shameful. That is.
Yeah, we'll have to see how this is being structured. Is it being structured along the 401k line that is more of a tax deferred plan, or will it be literally a tax free plan where, you know, what you invest and perhaps what you earn, sort of along the lines of a Roth IRA, if it's going to be like that, with or without certain withdrawal restrictions. So we'll look into it over the weekend, and certainly report back to you one day next week, right, Melody?
Exactly. And with that kind of news, the Dow couldn't hold its lead today. And the NASDAQ was only up 20 points. I mean, they will do anything. They will sacrifice the savings of each and every individual of this country just to continue with the illusion and to get elected.
It'll be interesting to see, too. Excuse me if I interrupted you there. Right. If the tax incentives or tax rewards or whatever will apply to individual investments in gold, silver, precious metals in general, or if this is just going to be something relating to the stock market.
Well, I think it would include the miners, but I don't think it would include physical. You know, although you do have the precious metals IRA, so I don't know if they would, you know, that commodity would fall into the same, you know. But I mean, if they're doing this in order to make sure that the market doesn't collapse on them before the election, and I mean, if they're going to these drastic measures, I mean, to me, I think that's a drastic measure. to just to keep the stock market from collapsing. But that's just my view. And again, we'll wait and bring you a little more news on that. I'm getting ahead of myself, but I know how things work when it comes to the stock market. It's just irritating. And but anyway, we'll move on. Let's talk about, you know, this is interesting, Dave. Your blog is about requiring personal finance classes, that more and more schools are beginning to require that they study money matters. You know, my question is, are they teaching them about real money or fiat money?
Well, that's a good question. And the little that I've begun to look at suggests the latter, that it's fiat money, that it's more of a conventional mainstream perspective, not something broader and possibly with more historical context, including gold. Again, we'll have to delve a little bit more deeply into that, and possibly even contact some of these organizations that are talking about it and pushing it. Ann Carnes, who's a writer, financial writer, reports that a growing number of states are requiring students to study money matters in high school as a condition of graduating. And the Council for Economic Education says that reflects a realization that people are responsible for their own financial future. Hey, better late than never, right? We'll see. In 21 states now, high school students are required to pass a personal finance course to graduate. That's a net gain of 4 states since the last study 2 years ago. Now, in that time, 5 states, Iowa, Kentucky, Mississippi, Ohio, and South Carolina, added the condition. Florida was the only one that dropped its requirement. Now, the CEE's president and CEO, Nan Morrison, said she was heartened by the overall findings. The council's mission is to, quote, equip K-12 students with the tools and knowledge of personal finance and economics so that they can make better decisions for themselves, their families, and their communities.
Is
lofty,
it
Melody?
What? What?
Lofty goal?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh. What say you?
No.
Well, logical?
Some say lofty. Some say logical. Yeah. Practical vision. In some respects, yes. Personal finance classes typically cover topics, practical, everyday things like budgeting, saving, credit scores, the cost of borrowing, interest rates, and paying for college. Now, as Melody, you know, asked at the top of this segment, does it include how to invest properly? Again, I honestly don't know the answer to that. Something we'll have to look into by the looks of things on the surface. However, it doesn't look like it's going that deeply. Morrison claims that
they probably teach them more about debt than they do about savings. But who knows? Because if they're going to cover topics like budgeting and credit scores, the cost of borrowing, interest rates, sounds more that it's more, you know, debt driven than. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, we'll have to try and find a couple sample syllabuses and see what topics are on there. She says the growing interest in financial education is being driven by concern about student debt, as well as the rise of the gig economy and the shift from employer-provided pensions to market-based retirement accounts. Recent research suggests that basic financial knowledge is sorely lacking among U.S. high school students. Well, I guess that's not a surprise, given my perception. I think the general consensus of people's perceptions about Americans in general IQ when it comes to personal finance. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, one in five 15-year-olds, the equivalent of high school freshmen in most cases, doesn't understand basic financial concepts. And actually, I'm surprised it's that high. The NCES says more must be done to improve access to financial education for lower-income students in particular. It cites research by Next Gen Personal Finance. That's a nonprofit that develops courses and actually funds training for high school teachers that analyzed course catalogs from 11,000 high schools. Next Gen found that in states without a state-level mandate for personal finance instructions, poorer students had far less access to financial education compared to wealthier students, presumably in wealthier school districts.
You know, I think children, you know, need to start early, and it really should come from the family. You know, I'd rather see parents teach their children more than schools teach their children on money and so forth. But I guess if they can get a double whammy, you know, from both the school and maybe we can change this world of debt that we're in. And, you know, maybe, you know, the young
well,
kids
we could.
Today.
Hmm? Yeah, I think it could take one or two generations, maybe three, hopefully no longer. Than that, might be too late by then. The problem is that far too many parents don't know much about personal finance, particularly the investing part of it. And that's where I think required personal finance education can maybe break that the path that we've been on. And so, like you said, that kind of education in the future can begin at home and at a younger age than 15. I mean, I remember we used to get to open our first savings account, and I think it was in first grade, maybe second. And that was a big deal. I mean, even though I think our first deposit was a quarter, but still, to get that, have that bank statement and that little plastic binder, little thing that fit in your back pocket, that was pretty cool. And then every Monday or so, you know, you bring in another quarter and you deposit it. And hey, with that compound interest, sooner or later, you know, you had a buck. Go out and buy your mom a Valentine's Day gift by the time you're in fifth grade.
And it just goes to show you that the decline, the value of the dollar, that you can't deposit quarters anymore. That quarter, adjusted for inflation, is probably $20. And with the fees that the banks charge, it's not even affordable anymore to teach, you know, the children this. Maybe in your smaller communities and your smaller banks and so forth, they might have something set up and so forth. But, I mean, you see more and more branches closing. You know, you have technology again that is, you know, closing a lot of the branches, no people contact. You know, it's, I don't know how hard it is to teach about money and savings accounts and things like that when it's all done online anymore. So it is a different, you know, things will be taught differently. And it's, you know, with us taking quarters to the bank, now the kids, they don't open savings accounts. They want their first credit card. at the age of eight.
Yes.
But it is a different world.
So they can buy their first iPhone at the age of nine.
Yes. You got it.
Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, read the blog. It's in your mailboxes now. I found some interesting information in this general survey. I think one of the keys is, particularly you precious metal investors, when you're talking with a family member about money, be they a teenager, be they an aunt or an uncle, a parent, make sure you share your knowledge about investing in precious metals. That's the one aspect that I suspect is missing in this kind of informal instruction. We'll look into it further and report back as we find more information.
And I think it is important, Melody, in the world that we live in today, because there is a lack of understanding of how money works. There's a lack of understanding of what's real money and what's fiat money. There's a lack of understanding of inflation versus prices rising due to supply and demand. There's it is cloudy. When you have your schools, I mean, to some degree, they don't. Am I still on? They don't.
Yes. Yes, you're on.
All right. Something happened to my mic, but so it is a place where I think everyone needs to start, because eventually there will come a day when the markets will correct. There will come a day when the system is reset due to the recklessness, the day of reckoning of our financial system, just not here in the States, but globally, that there will be a reckoning of that. So the only way to prepare your children is to make sure that they learn what money is about and how to protect themselves and how to save. 800-375-4188. Give us a call at Discount Gold and Silver. Thank you, Dave. Happy Valentine's Day to you and everyone out there in the listening audience. We'll be back on Monday. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.